The name of this workshop is A Structure for Hope, Traditions and Concepts. Let's start the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Welcome to the first ever Region 1 virtual convention. Take it away, Mark A. and Tana, and I believe Tana is starting. Thank you very much for being here.
My name is Tana, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm co-leading this section with Mark. So I have to start with telling you that for some reason I had in my mind that this was starting at 11, and then at 10:15 I looked at my schedule and went, oh my gosh, it's 30 at 10:30. So I rushed upstairs to my office and here I am. So I'm just a little bit discombobulated, but that's okay. This is why I'm powerless over my lack of time management and my life is unmanageable. And I've come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Anyway, you know, Mark and I are going to talk about the concepts and the traditions today. And you know what? They're not as boring as you might think. I think, you know, I'm going to be speaking about the traditions, so I'm going to talk about that. And what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to show how I use the traditions in all of my affairs, not just OA, and how that enhances the love in my life and how it brings me hope. I'm also going to give ideas of where to look in OA literature for help. So when I came into OA, it'll be 32 years ago, the day after Thanksgiving. I came into OA in the Bay Area. I was terrified. I came in because I had a friend of mine said that she wanted to go to an OA meeting, but she didn't want to go by herself. And so being a good flaming codependent with both afterburners going, I had to go to, you know, my first OA meeting with Gail because Gail needed the help and support. See, I didn't have a problem, right? So I walked in and the first meeting I saw was, oh my gosh, these people effed up. Don't you know that you don't air your dirty laundry to folks? Skeletons are to be kept in the closet, you know? And so I was just mortified by what I was hearing. And I was terrified that everybody would look at me and think, loser, you know, and I would see someone from work. Well, then I went to the second OA meeting with Gail because she needed my support. And I still thought everybody was really weird. And by the third meeting, it's like, okay, sign me up. I found my lost tribe. And I've been coming back ever since. I have never felt the need to leave OA. Thank goodness I've always kept coming back. My first 4 years, I was in and out of relapse. I want to say that I've had abstinence for 28 years on November 1st. And I have almost 31 years. Actually, I've got 31 years and about 10 months of abstinence from bulimia. So now you know how I got to OA. When I came into OA, I didn't have much hope. But what I heard was in my first meeting, at every meeting I went to in the Bay Area, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And so I hung on to those words from the big book. And I kept thinking, if I just work hard enough, and I've always been a good student, which has probably been, you know, a downside for me because I want to get the A and then get the heck out. But I just truly believe that if I kept coming back, and they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So I thought, I'm going to do my best. And either I'm going to succeed or I'm going to prove them wrong because they have this patriarchal God shit going on. And I wasn't too impressed with that. So that's how I got to OA. Like I said, my first year, 4 years, I was in and out of relapse. It was painful. I want to also say I'm about 50 pounds lighter than my top weight. I'm about 15 pounds above my goal weight, but I'm within the levels of, according to my doctor, of having a healthy body weight. So I'm not perfect. To me, I equate recovery with skinny. Well, recovery can be average too, but you know, that's my stinking thinking going on. So in OA, you know, I got a sponsor within a month. I worked the traditions, I worked the steps. I got a food sponsor and I got a step sponsor because I was burning out sponsors. I was really needy. And I dove into it with all, you know, I was given the gift of desperation and I just dove in. And when my sponsor said, jump, I said, give me a vector, magnitude and direction. How high? Geek alert. You can see my technical nature just kind of sneaks out in my share. I worked the steps. My sponsor let me know that the traditions were in the back of the book for a reason. If you're not, you know, you need to work both the steps and the traditions. Otherwise, you're only working half a program. And so when my first kind of epiphany in the program is when I went through a really serious big book study, and that really helped me get abstinent. My second epiphany in program was about year 8. And that's when I went through and did a tradition study with another OA member. And all of a sudden I realized these apply to all my relationships. And it gave me a lot of hope that I could, you know, even though my relationships were much better and I was open to receiving more love and giving more love in a healthy way, when I got to the traditions, I saw areas where I could really improve and how I could carry these traditions that we use in our meetings to keep our meetings healthy and safe. I can carry this into the workplace. I can carry this into my marriage. I can carry this into my family. And it really opened up a new aspect of my recovery. And so you might want to still be thinking, why do you care so much about relationships and these traditions? And the reason is it's issues in my relationships that make me want to eat. It's my character defects that come up and I work on in my steps and the way that I handle things that make me want to eat. And so if I can work the traditions as well as the steps in my relationships, I'm much more open to love. I have a lot more hope because it gives me something to work on. I'm one of these people, I'm kind of a human doing instead of a human being. And that's something I kind of got to work on in my program is if I'm continually working on things, I know I'm improving, I'm getting better, I'm becoming more healthy emotionally. It's kind of like what I've heard said is the first 5 years of the program are the physical years. We're really concentrating on physical recovery. The next 5 years are like where we come focus on, you know, emotional recovery. And the third 5 years, some of the spiritual recovery. And so part of working on that emotional spiritual recovery is working with the traditions. And I'll talk about this more when I actually get into the tradition study, but a little bit more about how I work my program. I sponsor people and I am sponsored. I've done service at the intergroup and the world service and the region level and the meeting level over the years. I love service. Service is fun. And you guys make me laugh. That's why I keep coming back. People say, why are you still going to that OA meeting? You know, your normal body weight, and you keep coming back. It's because you guys make me laugh. And, you know, there's such humor and laughter in these rooms. We are not a glum lot. We know how to have a good time without diving into the candy bowl. I just want to say life is much better now. Because of working the steps and the traditions in OA, I'm very successful in my career, and I'm so grateful for that. I used to always wonder why everybody had the secret magic decoder ring to have great relationships and live a happy life. And I always felt like I didn't have those tools in my toolbox. And even though I had great parents and, you know, a loving family, I just didn't have those tools. And I dealt with chronic depression and anxiety. And through these programs and getting some outside help, I've developed those tools. My toolbox is much, much more effective. So instead of using, you know, a toothbrush to scrub the streets of Seattle, I now got power washers. And that's, you know, that's kind of like how I look at the steps and traditions in my life. So with that, Mark.
Thanks, Tana. My name is Mark. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater, and it's really good to be here today. I knew the meeting started at 10:30. I got all my paperwork ready, but I'm still discombobulated. I'm kind of nervous about this, actually, to tell you the truth. I think there's a lot of resources here in the room from people in all over OA and in the area and probably all over the country who have a lot more knowledge about the concepts that I do. And I just hope that you will chirp up here and contribute, participate with anything that comes up. You know, a little bit about my story. I'm pretty new to OA. I've been in since 2012. I came in through the back door of another program. I was telling the truth about everything but the food. When I pretty much so long the time that I came into OA, I was well over 300 pounds. I think my top weight was around 325. And I'm now down to a pretty normal body weight. Oh, a good 100 pounds down from where I was when I walked in. So for me, it's a fatal disease. I just speak for myself, you know, the trend lines of the diet and all that stuff. The trend, the top trend line, to put it in engineering terms for Tana, is completely fatal. The end is not something that I want to look at. So I'm very grateful. I intend to be here for a long time. I was so fortunate to find a sponsor right away. The moment I walked into my first OA meeting, I felt at home. And I talk about hope a lot, and that's kind of the topic of this whole conference, is love and hope. And that's what I found in the fellowship of OA. There's nothing like a bunch of people. Like there's like 70 people here in the chat, I mean, in the room. We know, some of us know each other, but some of us don't, and it doesn't matter. We have such a common bond, such a common experience, no matter what side of the coin of the disease we're on, that we're so grateful. And we're going to talk about the concepts, you know, and I wish we just had a handout of the concepts, but they're readily available. If you just Google OA.org, and they're on there. And like the traditions, each concept has a spiritual principle. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when we talk about, get into the process a little bit. I like to think about the worldwide fellowship of OA as one big family. And, you know, families in addiction have a difficult time. And so, you know, the concepts help us as we get into the family dynamic of how to lead the family, that they really help us carry on the spiritual concepts that we have in the steps and traditions all the way through how we keep hope and love alive through the worldwide fellowship of OA. And that's kind of what we want to talk about. I'm going to be focusing on, don't worry, we're not going to do all 12 concepts plus the legacies. We're going to do just two concepts today. I'll just touch on them briefly. I'm going to talk about concept one, which talks about unity, and concept four, which talks about participation. Those are the ones that really called to me. And so I just kind of went with that, prepared to talk about that. So I look forward to having everybody on board. I know we're a little over time, so I'm going to stop and get going on the tradition one, which I think Thomas is going to talk about, or tradition, whatever tradition she wants.
Again, I'm Tana. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm going to talk about two traditions. First tradition I'm going to talk about is tradition one. And again, the purpose of these is to is not only to show how I use the traditions in OA meetings, but what I'd like to do is I like to share how I use the traditions in all of my affairs. And then also give ideas where to look in the OA literature. So if you have your OA 12 and 12, I recommend getting it handy, because I'm going to be giving you some page numbers to look at. And so you can write down some notes. So tradition one is, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. The spiritual principle is unity. You know, folks, we are not the Stepford Wives. Unity does not mean uniformity. As applied to our relationships, our common welfare should come first. A healthy relationship depends upon unity. And again, if there's unity, there's more opportunity for love. And for me, the traditions give me a lot of hope. So, you know, in the back of the OA 12 and 12, there are questions. And, you know, so what I've done is, you know, it talks about the principle of unity, and it has a bunch of examples. And then there's a whole bunch of questions at the back. And this is where we're looking at, if you've got the 12 and 12, the second edition, the questions are on the back of page 90. They start on page 95 for tradition one. And so if you have your 12 and 12, I recommend you get that out. And so, how well do I live by the first tradition in all my affairs? Some of the, you know, and I've kind of changed the questions up slightly. So it's, instead of toward the OA group, it's, how well do I live by the traditions in my relationships? So for example, are my friends, family, or group at work divided into cliques? Are we indifferent to others in the workplace or in my family or social setting? This is one of the things, you know, instead of, you know, saying in our meetings, I look at, are we divided into cliques in our neighborhoods or at work? And I know it's really easy to do this at this particular time with all the political upheaval in our country, to divide into cliques. And so that's something I take a look at. And I, whenever I do a tradition workshop, really the traditions are like doing a super heavy duty fourth step, and specifically about relationships. And every time I go through this, I think, oh crap, you know, I have so much to work on still after all these years, you know, I still have a lot to work on. You know, another thing is, do I seek to pull together as a couple, or am I divisive? Do I discourage gossip? Do I refrain from taking others' inventory? So in my marriage, do I seek to look for solutions together as a couple, or am I doing the one-upmanship with my husband? You know, do I need to be right, for example? And in my work environment, do I discourage gossip? That's a hard one, you know, especially right now because there's reduction in forces going on, you know, layoffs. And this is a tough time. And there's a difference between saying, hey, have you heard about so-and-so? I'm really concerned about him. Should we give him a call? You know, there's a big difference between that and, oh, did you hear so-and-so got laid off? Boy, they deserved it. You know, I mean, there's, you know, I get to look at how am I behaving? And fortunately, I'm you know, living within the traditions, and that makes my life a lot cleaner. It makes me a much safer person, and it invites more love and connection into my life. You know, am I kind to those in my family or at work or in relationships with whose personalities I dislike? Or do I talk about the love of my higher power while acting hostile to someone? Do I belittle others whose approaches to issues are different than mine? So, in that respect, in the OA fellowship, you know, we have some people follow a how concept, some people follow more traditional OA concept. Both are equally valid. I don't need to disparage anyone for following one way of doing it versus another. Similarly at work, I don't need to be snippy and nasty about somebody because they may have a different way of doing things on a project compared to me. Another question, do I give my full attention to whomever is talking, or do I carry on one-sided conversations so others really don't know what's going on? Or do I have poor listening or communication skills? Am I listening to hear, or am I listening to respond? So this is another, you know, question that I ask myself, especially at work meetings on Zoom. It is tough. You know, what I want to do is I want to text my coworkers and say, can you believe what they, you know, as I'm texting, you know, can you believe what they just announced? That's just a bunch of crap. You know, it's, don't do that, Tana. Listening and really paying attention. And I find that if I take notes, I'm much better at listening and paying attention. But these are the type of things when I give my full attention to whomever's talking, I am seen as a more safe person. People are going to want to approach me. I open the possibility for more love and unity in my relationships. This is a big one for me. Do I encourage all in my family, work environment, social situations, et cetera, to share their feelings honestly, even though they may be going through a rough time? Or do I take the attitude that those who are having trouble should just suck it up and deal with it? Well, I come from a good German farming community. And you just pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you suck it up, and you just deal with it. And that does not promote unity. It does not promote love and acceptance and hope in our relationships. And so one of the things that I've really worked on in my program is just listening. I don't have to even comment. I can just say if someone's having a hard time, I don't have to fix it. Oh my gosh, because I'm a codependent, I think I can fix anyone. Because I'm an engineer, I know I can. You know, so if someone shares a problem, I want to go in there and say, well, this is how you fix it. You know, I've had many years of training and fixing problems, so let me fix you. Not a good idea. All I need to do is listen to what they have to say. I don't need to fix them. I don't need to criticize. I don't even need to comment. All I can say is, wow, that sounds like it's really hard. Big hugs. And that's really, people just want to have someone to hear them, to bear witness. And then finally, question 7, do I discuss what I can do to better embrace diversity and unity at work and with family and friends? This is an area in our country right now where we're really struggling. And I've seen it come out in when I've given workshops on the traditions, even within the fellowship. And so, for example, I'm not a person of color, so I can't share what it's like to be a person of color, but I can embrace and welcome everyone. I don't care if you're Black, green, purple, blue, gay, straight, transgender, trans, whatever, gay, you know, lesbian, gender neutral, gender fluid. I don't care. You can even be Klingon. Just don't go after me with your bat left sword. You know, it's, you know, embracing unity because we all have something to give is really, I think, really it gives me a lot of hope, because for a lot of years, I felt like the odd man out because I was a female in a technical field. And not many people when I was growing like science and math like I did. So, you know, I kind of have an idea in some respects what it feels like to be odd man out. So having that unity gives me a lot of hope. It gives me much more acceptance and it makes it safe for everyone. So thoughts in which to meditate. In the OA 12 and 12, second edition, if you want to look at relationships, page 92 has great information on relationships. Respect and responsibility is also discussed on page 92. How to resolve differences, page 93. Unity does not mean uniformity, page 95. Our first tradition of unity reminds us of an important truth. We are not alone. We are connected to our fellow human beings. Our emotional and spiritual health depend on the health of our relationships. The disease of compulsive overeating, which once isolated us, has now led us to OA. Here we are learning to connect with other people in ways that will nurture them and nurture us as we recover together. Page 97 of the OA 12 and 12, second edition. There are four magic words that have helped me in challenges. When I talked earlier about, you know, do I focus on what we have in common or do we bring up differences just for the sake of argument? You know, some people, just because I'm working on my recovery and working on being the best person I can be, following a spiritual path, doing my steps, doesn't mean everybody else in my life is. And so, you know, sometimes I get into situations and I like to be right. And I don't like to argue, but I like to, you know, if there's something, if there's a wrong that needs to be righted, I can be really a debater. But, you know, sometimes would you rather be right or would you rather be in a relationship? And so four magic words that I have found that have helped me in some of these situations, especially at work, because engineers, we love to be right, is saying when I'm in one of those tense situations, you may be right. You may be right. Now, what I'm not saying is you may also be full of crap, but we're not saying that. It allows them to have a little bit of dignity. It allows me to back away and it allows us to have some space between that disagreement or that charged conversation. So again, four magic words, you may be right. Okay, awesome, Mark.
I've been looking, searching OA high and low for information on a little bit more iteration of the background of the concepts and how we can apply them to our personal lives. And there really isn't much. And so, but we do have a pamphlet called The 12 Concepts of OA Service. And you can get it, probably your local meeting has it, or you can, yep, there you go, Brenda's got it. Or you can get it from the website. And I'm just gonna take a minute or two. I can't articulate this any better than what's here. And I'm just gonna read a couple paragraphs and then I'm gonna go into more of a personal thing on concept one. The concepts depict the chain of delegated responsibility we use to provide service throughout the world. Although they focus on OA, world services, the concepts direct all OA's trusted servants to well-considered actions for group participation, decision-making, voting, and the expression of minority opinions. The 12 concepts support our primary purpose of carrying OA's message of recovery to the still suffering compulsive overeater. And that's a message of hope, that's what it is. In my opinion, the concepts are rooted in our experience that we are best served when we trust in a power greater than ourselves. To trust means that we do not try to run the show. Rather, we work in fellowship with other recovering compulsive overeaters and our higher power to carry OA's message effectively. A single word principle such as unity, trust, responsibility, and selflessness accompanies each concept in this pamphlet. So these principles remind us that a power greater than ourselves is always guiding the service we provide. So I'm just going to read concept one. The spiritual principle behind concept one is unity, a common theme in the traditions as well. The ultimate responsibility for all authority for OA world service resides in the collective conscious of our whole fellowship. And I just want to dive in on those two words, responsibility and authority. And then I'm going to, you know, kind of dive into a little bit of apply it to myself and in all my affairs. And I'm not going to get into the service structure too much because I want to kind of experiment with how I take something that is, that some people think are service oriented and apply it to my personal life and how I live. I always had a hard time figuring out what was my responsibility and what was my authority in my family, in my relationships. And I usually erred on the part that everything was my responsibility and I had authority over everything. And this concept demonstrates to me that really that's not really right, that I need to look at others, like, and in terms of my family and my relationships, there might be other people involved besides me. And it doesn't really work for good relationships, in my opinion. And I've had lots of experience, and I can document this in a longer conversation about how many various failures as a result of my taking the authority and driving the truck. But, you know, that's for another story. But I do have the experience. That's kind of where I go. Confusion about role and responsibilities affects all my relationships. When I was working, it affected it at work because, of course, you know, bosses can never boss me the way they should have, right? And I've had to figure out that I needed to take responsibility and I had the authority over me, and that's about it. And so this concept is really important to me. And I've got some questions that I thought I might throw out there. You might want to jot these down because we're going to have a time for writing time. And the first one is, like, in what ways does concept one help me keep the focus on myself? Okay, it's because I am only responsible for me. I'm not responsible for others. I can give them the dignity of their own opinions and their own participation, in which we're going to talk about in concept four, in what's going on. It reaffirms that I'm responsible for my life, and that's about it. And I'm good with that. Another question is, how can concept one help me trust the decisions of others? And for me, it comes down to the spiritual principle of letting go and letting God. I've had the opportunity to express my opinion, and I can let go and let others have their opportunity to express their opinion in a respectful way. And then, you know, just what is my responsibility? In what situations have I assumed responsibilities that were not mine? Oh my goodness, I don't have enough time here to talk about that. But it's like, sometimes I think when it can even be driving a car, you know, it's like, I'm responsible for keeping my car in my own lane. I'm not responsible for the guy running the stoplight. I think he's gonna run the stoplight, but, you know, is he? And meanwhile, I lose focus from where I am in my relationship to my vehicle. I mean, it's like, it's really crazy. And I have assumed responsibilities in relationships which were none of my business, none of my business. And in doing so, I have robbed individuals who are in relationship with me of the dignity of doing their own thing, making their own decisions, taking responsibility for their own authority. And I can point to that as a total, total reason for many relationships crashing and burning. Me just taking control and not letting anybody else have anything to say. And then another question is, in what situations have I allowed others to assume responsibilities that should have been mine? That's the flip side. And that comes from me not being able to articulate what I need in a relationship. I have not taken responsibility for my own needs. I have not taken responsibility for articulating what I want, what I need in a relationship. And I think that has driven a couple of people crazy who have been in relationship with me. And maybe I'm being a little bit hard on myself about that, because it takes two to tango, but that's my side of the street on that. And these concepts help me look at that. And that's another topic for a longer discussion. So how can concept one help me detach and let go and let God instead of trying to control the lives of others? And my answer to that is, look, other people have a higher power and I am not it. And I need to let go and let them have the dignity to do that. And, you know, we talk about the balanced responsibility, you know, I need to know that there are things that I can have an opinion on and but, you know, I don't get to vote at every meeting because I need to be a participant in a, like a business meeting for a group, right? I would never vote in a business meeting of a group that I'm not a regular participant on. There's some things that, you know, and I may have an opinion on the issue, but I'm not going to vote because I need to balance my, it's a participation thing. And it's like, a, I need to do that. So that's all I have on concept one. I think we'll go on to the next one.
Thank you so much, Mark. Now, my goal next is to have you do a workshop on just the concepts because I'm learning so much good stuff and I want to learn more. No pressure. Okay, the next tradition I want to talk about is tradition five. Tradition five is each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. The spiritual principle is purpose or a primary purpose. Keep it simple, pass it on. So as applied to relationships, each relationship has but one primary purpose, to love and serve others in a relationship as an expression of our higher power's love. So some questions, again, I'm looking at the back of the OA 12 and 12 second edition. Page 119 is tradition five, and the questions start on page 129. And so the questions I'm going to talk about are essentially, they're kind of pulled from the traditions in the back of the 12 and 12, but I want to make sure that you know where they're at so you can look yourself. So how well do I live by the fifth tradition in all of my affairs? For example, do I concentrate sufficiently on my relationship's primary purpose? For example, at work, do I focus on the primary purpose of our group, to complete a project or to sell a software tool?
Excuse me, Tana, we're on page 122 for the group.
Page 122. Yes, you're right. Thank you. I went to the wrong tradition. That was good. Thank you. Now that I'm a little bit discombobulated here. So back to the questions. For example, do I focus on the primary purpose of the group to complete a project? Do I focus my discussions on the goals or methods to achieve that primary purpose? It's real easy at work to get sidetracked. You know, I had this one coworker, you know, it was like an episode of Crossfire on the political spectrum. He was on the right and I was on the left and we'd get together, but I mean, it was all in fun, but that was not the primary purpose of why we were at work. And so when I started doing the tradition study, I stopped doing that at work. It's like, what is the primary purpose? It's not to argue about politics, even if it's in fun, it's to get the job done. And in sticking to the primary purpose in my relationships, this example was work, I'm keeping things safer. It's just safer to stick to the primary purpose. When I start bringing in outside issues, it dilutes the purpose, the primary purpose, it dilutes, and it things like bad feelings come in, controversy comes in, you know, and it's kind of fun to have that spark of controversy, but it's not in keeping with our primary purpose. Same with OA. We focus on our primary purpose, to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. So the second question, do I welcome new people to my group, family, or circle of friends and give them individual attention? Do I make it a point to talk with them, give them my email address or phone number as appropriate? Do I ever volunteer to help them? So this I can do within my OA meetings to help give newcomers hope, but also I can do this at work. If we get a new coworker in, am I going out of my way to make sure they feel welcome? So they feel the love of the group, so to speak. Do I volunteer to help them? And this is something where I really try to practice this principle at work. The thing I love about the 12 steps and 12 traditions is they give me a blueprint for living that keeps me out of the food. Again, I care. Why do I care so much about the traditions? Because the traditions help me with my relationships. And it's my relationships that make me want to eat when there are problems. You know, so if I get into a discussion that's turned south or an argument with someone, what is my first thought? Food. So if I can maintain healthy relationships, that being following the traditions and practice these principles in all my affairs, I'm a lot less likely to get into the food. Another thing is, am I a mentor to others in my community, church, and work environment? And I keep bringing up work because I've been working way too many hours. But this is something I feel really strongly about. People have reached out to me. And it's funny, it's other 12-steppers have been the best mentors to me at work. And we've kind of eventually found out we were both 12-steppers, you know, just kind of by the language we use. But one of the things they have put their hand out to me to pull me forward, to help me in my career. And so what I do, I pay it forward. I mentor others. I mentor other young women in my career. I mentor newer engineers. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what I strive for. And so whatever I do, I look at what can I do to make my impact in a positive sense, to spread knowledge or to spread welcomeness. And I do this because it helps bring in more love. It brings in more love to the group. It brings in more acceptance, gives people hope when they feel hopeless on a project. It really improves the morale of the group. So this is something I feel really, mentoring is something I feel really strongly about. Question 4, do I remember that elders, experienced long-timers, parents, et cetera, may also suffer or be lonely? How do I treat my family, my community members, or coworkers who are facing difficulties in their lives? Do I make it a point to call or contact them when they haven't been seen or heard from in a while? This is really appropriate right now during the COVID experience in our country. This reminds me, there's a few people that have kind of drifted away from our meetings. I need to call them, make sure they're okay. If I haven't heard from someone at work, just check in. You just send a quick email. Hey, how you doing? I haven't heard from you in a while. You doing okay? My mom lives alone and I can't go visit her because of COVID. This really upsets me. I won't be able to see her at Thanksgiving. And I've got a bit of a resentment about that, but I know it's for the best, but it still makes me mad. Got to work on that a little bit here, but I can still reach out. I don't have to call. I can text, I can email, I can call. You know, there's other ways I can reach out. I can play online games. There's one online game I play with her and we just kind of go back and forth every day. We play a move, but there's ways that I can keep in touch with my elders just to help them feel connected. And finally, can I see my partner or my coworker or my family member? But I'm going to do this with my partner. Can I see my partner through my higher power's eyes or hear them through my higher power's ears? Boy, that's pretty powerful. Because it's real easy for me to think, well, he's not doing this and he's not doing that. Can I see them through my higher power's eyes or ears? I'm married to an amazing man. And when I show him that appreciation and see him through my higher power's eyes, I'm treating him a lot better. And that really helps with love in the family. Thoughts in which to meditate. For OA groups and OA individuals alike, the fifth tradition helps us to keep it simple. We find that when we focus on our primary objective of carrying the message of recovery, we are empowered to use our talents in ways that are truly useful to others. The result is better than any outcome we could have planned for ourselves, and we find a deep satisfaction in service as we join forces to share recovery in OA. That's page 123 from the OA 12 and 12 second edition. So some questions. How is OA unique and why do we need to stick to our primary purpose? Page 120. What are the principles behind the steps and traditions? Page 121. A key principle of tradition 5, page 120. How and why does recovery happen? And what should be the focus of every meeting? Page 121. To whom should we carry the message? Why should we look beyond our own group? Page 122. And finally, I want to say that I've heard it said that the steps prevent us from suicide, the traditions prevent us from homicide, and the concepts prevent us from genocide. So each 12 step, 12 tradition, 12 concept has a different purpose. Okay, so tradition 5 reminds us that a recovery doesn't come from simply discussing our problems with each other. It is in the OA message, in our living the steps and traditions, that we find solutions to our problems. Living by these principles has saved our lives. Honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, self-discipline, love, perseverance, spiritual awareness, service, unity, trust, identity, autonomy, purpose, solidarity, responsibility, fellowship, structure, neutrality, anonymity, and spirituality. These principles, rather than our problems, should be the focus of every OA meeting. The same thing applies when we sponsor other OA members. We help most when we listen, avoid giving advice, and sharing our experience with living the OA principles. And that's also kind of the definition of sponsorship. So I think with that, I'll stop now and hand it over to Mark. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. The next concept I want to talk about a little bit is concept 4, and the the spiritual idea behind it is equality. And I'll just read it. The right of participation ensures equality of opportunity for all in the decision-making process. You know, I've heard it said, another way to put this is that participation is the key to harmony. And I really like that. I like that idea. My experience in service has really, it's so important. I think I love here up in the Seattle area, we have a very active intergroup. And it is my observation of the groups that there's a really healthy rotation of service. And that means that there's a lot of participation at a lot of different levels. It's a direct, I mean, you can really see the results in how this particular intergroup operates. So I'm very, very grateful for that. I had a service sponsor once, and I asked her very early on, I said, why are you having me do all these service positions? I mean, this, I could do this, I do this. I mean, it's, you know, pity pot, right? And she said, she looked at me and she said, with her beautiful blue eyes, and she said, because I don't want to lose you. And that stuck with me for a very, very long time, because it meant that I was loved, that I mattered, and that there was hope for me. I always think about that. I've got some questions about this. For me, that I would rather just be by myself. I'd rather just isolate. I would rather just crawl under the rock, and that will be fine. Thank you very much. But this concept is participation, not isolation. And that's really important to me, because it's, I was talking about the fatalness of the disease of overeating. It's directly related for me to the fatalness of isolation. When I participate, as hard as it is sometimes, it's better for me. And it helps in my recovery. So one of the questions is, in what ways do my relationships benefit when I participate in all areas of my life? So I'm going to take that outside of the OA structure a little bit and talk about all areas of my life. You know, what does that mean to me when I participate in all areas of my life? It means in a program format, it means that I'm talking to my sponsor every day. It means that I'm doing the things that I need to do in service to keep an active part in the OA fellowship. I'm sponsoring, yes. Am I sharing, in my situation, sharing my food with my food sponsor or my partner in recovery every day, which I've done almost every day since I walked in here in 2012, is very important to me. And that's part of my participation in my recovery. And when I don't do that, when I don't participate, other areas of my life start falling apart. And it doesn't take very long. So I need to keep that participation going. So for me, participation means harmony for me, as well as everybody else around me. My relationships today are so much better than they were when I first came into OA or started my recovery process because of this balance. But it's easy for me to forget it, and it's easy for me to get off the path a little bit. It doesn't take very much. So I need to really focus on that. Teamwork. This concept speaks to teamwork. How does my participation vary depending on the group with which I am involved? And I talked about a little bit that before, but you know, in a group level, I may just drop in on a meeting, you know, but I'm participating by being there and by sharing and by all that. But you know, I don't necessarily participate in their business meeting. In some of my teams or groups that when I was working, I'm not working now. I'm retired, but I wouldn't always have to be in charge, believe it or not. I could let go and let somebody else drive the bus for a while and just rely on that little inner voice in myself that says, you know, here's what you say, here's how you say it. And I used to consciously pray during meetings for the right words to say, and they would come So I began to really trust on that higher power, little inner voice that would give me the words. Letting others participate. How does allowing others to participate in a project without my consent, without my constant oversight, result in mutual respect for all of us? Let others delegate the responsibility for others and let them participate and let them build that esteem and that respect for doing a good job and participating without this constant oversight, this constant criticism, this constant comment from me. Ask me how I know all this. I'm a compulsive eater. Well, this compulsive eater owned a pizza restaurant for 23 years. How great is that, right? I learned in that business that I needed to lead like this with my, like this rather than like this. And what a difference when I allowed team members, employees to, I would just say, look, what do you think you should do? What would you do in this situation? And the results are astonishing. And when you build a team that way, and that's a lot to do with allowing everybody to participate is the key to harmony. And it's the key to good business. And it's the key to great structure in our program. It's why, I mean, I just became a delegate and I've just been astonished at the richness. This stuff really works and it really does. It is carried through at that level of service. And it's why I wanted to do this, help with this workshop, because I think it's so important. And everyone is important. How does participating in the decision-making process allow me to detach when I don't agree with the outcome? I don't agree with everything, but I know that I've had my opportunity to share my view, even if I'm in the minority opinion. I've been given the respect to be able to share it. And how much time do I have left? I got a real quick story.
A minute and a half.
Okay. In the middle of this pandemic, my partner and I are remodeling our entire house. And do you know how many decisions there are to remodel an entire house? Crazy. We're at the very tail end of it. I have been kind of the liaison between the contractor and my partner. And we've been doing very well. But there have been times, just a few, when I have taken it upon myself to make a decision about something. And this little voice in the back of my mind goes, you know, you might want to run that by her. And I didn't. And it's a fundamental, it just hasn't been working. So it just reinforces this whole notion of participation is the key to harmony. And again, ask me how I know this, because, and so we work it out and we're doing great with this project, but my program happens right under my nose. And this is an example of how I need to keep these concepts in mind in all my affairs, especially in a remodel in the middle of a pandemic. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you, both Tana and Mark. Per your choice, you wanted to do 10 minutes of quiet for writing or meditation. Is that still accurate?
Yes, writing, if they want to write on any of the questions, and then we'll meet back.
Thank you. We are now back, and Tana and Mark would like to answer any questions that you have. If we have time after the questions, we will move to shares. And we have a first raised hand, and that's Linda. Welcome, Linda.
Hi, my name is Linda Jay, and I'm a compulsive eater from the Chicago area. And I didn't have a question. I just wanted to share that there are tradition videos on the website. They're only 3 minutes long. There's about a minute about how to apply the traditions in a group and another minute about how to apply them in my family and then in my relationships. And I think those might be helpful for people to use. Thanks.
Thank you. And we have Kat.
Oh, I can't believe I'm asking a question. So, you know, I was in the shower before this, and I was just thinking about how different my husband and I pay bills. Like, I'm auto pay for all my life, and he's like, we've got to do it like this. And I was just thinking that this concept, one, whose responsibility is it, and who has the authority? You know, I haven't been married that long. And so whose authority and what is my role? And tradition one, the unity of the family. So this is going to apply to my life and how I pay bills and stuff, which is kind of important. And so I just really appreciate you guys with your personal examples. And of course, I just talked about money. But so this has been really just awesome. So thank you. So are you, no, here's my question. Are you auto pay or, no, just kidding. Okay. I'll go away now. Okay.
Okay, we have a question from Adrian.
Thank you for your workshop today. I'm wondering if either of you have worked with your sponsees through the concepts of service.
Yeah, I have worked the concepts several times with sponsees in another program, but same concepts, but not really in the OA program yet. It worked the traditions, but not concepts, but that might be a good idea.
And we have Dorothy.
Hi, I'm Dorothy. I'm a compulsive eater. One of the things that comes to mind is the allowing others to participate. I am the ultimate know-it-all, and I want to share that with you because, of course, I know it all. And so if I was at work and, you know, Jane said to Joe, hey, Joe, how do you do such and so, I would turn around and tell them how to do it. It's like, it finally dawned on me through, I don't remember what kind of input, that was a bad idea. But if Jane said, hey, Dorothy, how do you do this? I would tell her. But if Jane said it to Joe, I could let Joe be smart and have an answer. And then if Joe said, I don't know, then I could say, I know, would you like my input? And, you know, my biggest problem with that and some other things like that is when I'm behaving myself, nobody pats me on the back. I don't get any attention for it. And before I was getting negative attention, at least. So now I have to just go, okay, good job. Thanks.
Thank you, Dorothy. And Suzanne, you have a question or a comment, please.
Yeah. Go ahead. It was a wonderful workshop. I have my question is, when are you guys going to do more workshops? I'd love to be a part of it. I also just kind of wanted to say that I also really like the fact that you didn't try to cram all of the concepts and all of the traditions into the workshop. I thought that was brilliant. And I also really liked that you gave us the 10 minutes so that we could reflect and write and just kind of go deeper within our own experiences. The one thing that I do with the traditions concepts and the steps, the spiritual principles related to those, is when I have a list of them and I take those into when I'm listening to a fifth step, so that I can also like give people information on where they're kind of, you know, going right and going left with those. So I just kind of wanted to share that. And once again, thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Suzanne, for your share. Next, we have Elaine.
I'm Elaine, compulsive overeater up in Bellingham, Washington area. And I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but in our group that's changed from an in-person meeting to now all on Zoom, my primary group that I attend, my home group, we are having a problem of, in my opinion, having a problem of certain handful of the group, like four or five or maybe six leaders of the group enjoy the Zoom and like to lead the meetings. And so they're repeatedly leading the meetings and the newcomers are really not participating. The newcomers are really not stepping up to lead a meeting. And it's kind of rotating this leadership, and it's getting a little bit tedious because we're getting the same messages from the same people. And I'm super concerned about the newcomers, because if you're in an in-person meeting, you're going to talk to that newcomer, you're going to encourage them to lead the meeting. But it appears to me like the newcomers are hanging back a little bit. And we're also finding out in a business meeting, it's the same thing. It's like the two or three people that are doing the leadership positions. This doesn't mean, to me, it's not like we're unified enough and have enough of a group conscience. And I'm afraid that some people just get tired of it and not feel needed and drop out. I'm wondering what the thoughts would be from other people on how to address that and get more of that unity and group conscience going in Zoom.
So one thing that I found is really helpful, and I don't know if your meeting is doing this because I can't remember if I heard you saying this or not, but one of the things our meeting was doing before the Zoom meetings was one meeting a month, we focused on the traditions. And one of the things in tradition 7 is, do we rotate our service positions regularly, or do we have the same person doing the same positions all the time? And so one of the things I found whenever there's a challenge in a meeting, or there's conflict or disharmony or something like that, a lot of times it can point back to there's perhaps a tradition that's being overlooked. And having that, you know, one tradition a month, I think is really important. It's you know, studying that. And that would be my thought, is having that be a regular part of the meeting rotation if you do rotate topics.
I think also I would, in addition to that, sounds to me like a group inventory is in store. And we were talking a little bit when we talked about both of these concepts too, is that, you know, participation is the key to harmony. And part of that is stating what you're feeling honestly and letting go of the fear. I don't know if you're experiencing that, but I have been in that position where I said, geez, should I say something or not? Well, I've always not regretted saying something of that important when I said it, and just swallowed it up, took a deep breath and just got it out and let the chips fall where they may. But I think a group inventory is very valuable.
And now we have Diane from BC.
My name is Diane. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater from Vancouver, British Columbia. My question is directed to Mark. Before I figured out the blue hand thing, I typed a question to you, Mark, during the break. It's regarding my family of origin makes decisions unilaterally. They make decisions without me. So I'm not included in the decision-making process, and yet I'm expected to comply with what the decisions that my family make are. And I'm having a really hard time with this, and I'm not sure how to proceed. I go from being very angry with their decisions to being very hurt by their decisions. I go from 0 to 60, everything in between. Then I come in and pray, meditate, turn it over to God to the best of my ability. But how do I deal with this?
Okay, so putting the sponsor hat on a little bit, do you have a sponsor?
I do.
Okay. There's a way of doing a spot check, four-step inventory on this specific situation that I urge you to talk to your sponsor about. And I wouldn't take any action or anything until I did that. And you can, I take the opportunity to really dig a little deeper into some of these. What I'm hearing are a little bit of resentments, perhaps, possibly. I guess that's a nice way to put it, right? I would really take a look at that and work it with your sponsor. And also, some of the principles and the traditions and the concepts could be very helpful to you. So if you want to take a peek at those, but really that's where I would start with that.
Thank you, Mark. And now Meryl.
Hi, I'm Meryl, compulsive eater, bulimic. Great to be here. And thank you for the person who sent me the registration at the kind of last minute. So glad I'm able to be here. And thank you so much for your shares. Really looking at some of this stuff in ways that I haven't before. The Zoom thing is really tough. And, you know, I know, we're all in these weird, uncertain times during COVID, and our ways of meeting have just changed. And for me, it's kind of a point of gratitude because I moved to a small town where the meeting schedule doesn't work with my work schedule. And I'm able to go to my old Portland meetings on Zoom and see my home group and the people that I, you know, have seen in the rooms for 20 years. And they're all the same people. And they all, you know, most of them seem to be doing really great, or at least just getting through life and being absent and being happy. But I personally wanted to address sort of some of the leadership and kind of the stagnancy of leadership in the Zoom meetings, because I personally am not that comfortable with video chat and Zoom. I do it for work, but not in my personal life so much. And it really feels a little bit maybe less safe sharing some of the personal, you know, some of my most personal feelings and thoughts on a video, on a two-dimensional platform. And the other thing is, there are a lot of young people, particularly in the Portland groups, but I feel like I'm sort of aging out a little bit of the technology. So moderating or leading a meeting for me is very uncomfortable because I feel like I'm going to screw it up. And so I wonder, and this is just, you know, I don't want to problem solve because, you know, we've been talking a little bit about that in terms of listening versus problem solving, but sort of talking with would-be leaders about, you know, hey, there's support available for us with the technology. And then just really encouraging people to share on the chat as a safe space and even without the video on. So that's all I got. Thank you very much. And, you know, I'm here 35 years, but it's still just one day at a time.
Thank you, Meryl. And now it's Ann.
Hi, Ann from Washington. And also, I want in the OA in Alaska and Wolgalam. I was an OA since 1988. We lost for the past 2 years, and I had 5 years and 7 months free for thinking about food, and I was asthmatic. I had a stroke. They said I would never call again, but I did. And also had 2 years in 1988. And I was using all the tools. I was using the sets and I spotted people. I was doing survey report on committees. I did it all. And now, 4 years ago, my husband passed away, and now for the past 2 years, I can't seem to get it back. So how do I get it back? Thank you.
I was having a little bit of a hard time understanding what the question is.
How do I get my abstinence back?
How do you get your abstinence back?
Yes.
For me, it's kind of back to basics. I would look at, do I have a sponsor? And am I talking with that sponsor on a regular basis?
Yes.
Am I using every tool or the tools on a daily basis?
Yes.
And going to meetings, just kind of, this is something, yes, I think it's really good to work with your sponsor. I know that for myself, my first 4 years in program, I was doing all the right things and I still couldn't get abstinent. And so I had to realize that I had, for me personally, I had a little bit of trouble turning my will and my life over to the care of God. I kept taking that control back. Mm. If God is your co-pilot, switch seats. That's where I was having trouble. God was my co-pilot. He needed to be my pilot. And I had to work through it with my sponsor. I hope that helps a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jan W.
I was interested in the question, do we try to make the OA fellowship known to people outside who need help? That has been an even more important question recently. And I was outreach chair for my intergroup last year. And I found that I wanted to be perfect in my execution of my job. And that blocked me from doing anything. And I didn't ask God for the next best thing to do. I considered myself the one that had to make it happen. And another thing, I was in fear that some of the ideas I had could make some people unhappy because it involved advertising, and that thing about the media gets in the way of that. And so that question really spoke to me, and I'm going to try to revisit that and use some of the skills that I have to make some progress, even if it's not perfect progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. And Sarah Leah.
I just had my experience with meetings that are not wonderful, people taking over. And so this was a few years ago and it was in person, but I do the same thing anyway. Every time I made sure I talked every month, and every month I talked on the traditions and brought it back to the fact that there was no gossip, because that was going on. And the other thing about people in a meeting here, they just say in the beginning of the format, we encourage newcomers to speak. And that seems to have worked. I wanted them to say, you know, if you've spoken last week, please don't speak this week. But of course that, my God, they were appalled at that idea. But so I didn't get it done. But, you know, maybe I'll do that with that meeting. I'll just start every time I talk, I'll talk on the traditions. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much for everyone for being here, for our speakers, Tana and Mark. Region 1 offers a matchup service for virtual sponsors. Find out more at our website, oaregion1.org. Region 1 maintains a speaker list. Now that there is no travel costs involved getting to faraway meetings, how about bringing your experience, strength, and hope to a new meeting in Region 1? You can add your name if you are willing to speak, or you can request a copy of the speaker list. Check out again Region 1 website, oaregion1.org. We will now close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
The courage to change.
Change the things I can.
And wisdom to know the difference.